But as I'm scrolling through my weather app, I scrolled over to Ottawa, Illinois, which is a town we do some commercials for, and I'm kind of near and dear to. And on Tuesday, or is it Wednesday of next week, this is just what they're saying. Don't tell Demetrius Ivory. I mentioned this on the radio. He said, don't believe those weather apps. But mine says Tuesday, sunshine 88. So somewhere in between, there's supposed to be spring, right? We're supposed to get 68 to 77 for about 47 days. Tom Gimbel, do you have the sunshine and days with the 47 to the 80 to the 69 degrees, the ones I'm looking for? Where are they?
I mean, why does the spring solstice start on March 21st if it doesn't get warm until June?
Yeah. Somebody needs to do something about this right now. Tom Gimbel joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. Go ahead, Tom.
No. I was simply going to say that I think we need to move Christmas to a Saturday, and we need to get the solstices in the right time of year and get things rolling the right way, John.
Yeah,
I think you should lead the charge.
I think the 4th of July should now be August 1st, but I don't know that we can do that. Let's talk a little bit about moms re-entering the workforce ahead of Mother's Day. Mother's Day is actually a landmark day for a lot of people to really get into their garden and do their gardening. I hope the weather cooperates, but talk to me a little bit about this.
Well, I think the issue, first of all, we're going to call it moms reentering the workforce, but it's really parents reentering the workforce. While it's a lesser percentage, there are stay-at-home dads who choose to reenter the workforce at a given point in time. But for simplicity and ease, and the majority, we'll call it moms reentering the workforce rather than apologize for saying it incorrectly. And what we have is several areas of moms reentering. Number one, that people are focusing the most on is those that stayed home to be with their kids during COVID in case there was a COVID scare at school and they haven't gone back, which is legitimate, but really there's a bigger focus. There's moms that leave to raise their kids, whether it be for the first 5 years before they go to kindergarten, whether it be for the first 12 years before they get to junior high, what have you, and they're looking to reenter the workforce, and that's always happening, John, and there's always a transition. And there's the biggest problem that those moms have reentering the workforce is more confidence than lack of skills.
More confidence than lack of skills. Really, some people are apprehensive about going back into the workplace?
Oh, I've dealt with back-to-work moms who were CPAs, who had MBAs, who were directors of a business practice or a vice president.
Yeah.
They're out for 15 years to raise kids,
yeah.
And their confidence is so shattered from a standpoint of A, the computer skills and savvy,
yeah.
And B, how to keep up and talk and work with, you know, this next generation.
That's a really interesting point. In fact, now that you mention it, I had a conversation very much like that with somebody who went home for the kids and is now ready to go back into the workplace and feels like we're all speaking a different language now. And guess what? We're not any smarter than we used to be. We make the same mistakes we used to make. And
well,
some of us,
John, I'm going to correct you on that, because the difference is the people who've been working during that time are smarter than they were 15 years ago. They've been challenged. They've been working with other forward-thinking professionals who challenge them every day, and taking nothing away from stay-at-home parents. I think it's a very valuable thing if that's what your lifestyle wants. But when you spend your life with children and you're the smartest one in the room all the time, you're not getting any smarter. You read any book from Buffett or Gates or any of these guys, and it's always, you know, you're a product of who you hang around with. If you hang around with little kids all the time, you're not getting smarter. They're getting smarter because they're around somebody more intelligent than them, but you're not.
I think that I don't think you and I are that far apart, but I will say this. This is the point I was trying to make, that you may not have kept up, but you are as smart as you are, and we are as smart as we are, and you can catch up. I think people should not fear what the workplace is like coming back, because I'm telling you, people like me make mistakes all the time, and we have learning curves every day. And if you are engaged and want to do it, you can do it. Do you argue with me on that?
No, I don't disagree with you entirely on that. I think the key thing then becomes the price point. And so you'll get people because it's an easier barrier to entry, a lower barrier to entry, and the skill set isn't intimidating. They go into retail, and they'll make, you know, $9, $10, $11, $12, $15 an hour working at Nordstrom's or working at Starbucks, and you see middle-aged people doing that all the time in the local communities. But when they go into the office, they think they need to be making $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year because they're comparing themselves and they're saying, "Well, I was making $125,000, and I can't take too big of a haircut from where I was." Versus saying, "I'm learning something all over again." And to your point, their brain power is still there, but it's going to take them months to get into that confidence level, the workflow, the balance, the stress, and to get there. And I think too often, back-to-work moms put too much pressure on themselves to be that superhero they are in the home, in the office, and that is a mistake.
Okay, let's do this. I'm out of time. You are hosting an event Tuesday, May 24th, right?
Yep, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in our offices. You can find it on our website at 200 North LaSalle. But it's basically a networking event for back-to-work moms who have any reason they want to come back, whether it's COVID or not, and they want to network and get to know other working moms, other professionals in a very low-stress environment, just to figure out more about what they're able to do and what opportunities exist in the white-collar office space.
How do I sign up for or find out more about this?
The same as always, John Williams. You go to the website, LaSalle, LaSalle network.com.
All right. Nice to talk to you again, Tom. It's always a pleasure.
Stay healthy, John.
Philip Weiss is the president of SciFarthAtWork.com. And Philip, you are here to talk about something I have never heard of, a TRA. What is that?
Yeah, it's something that a lot of employees have never heard of, and to their shock and at times horror, they learn about it a little too late. A TRA is essentially what is called in the legal field a training repayment agreement. And this is language that sometimes gets tucked into an employment offer or agreement, unbeknownst to the employee, because it's just part of the boilerplate. And what it ends up doing, John, is requiring that the employee repay the boss, the company, the employer, if they leave the company within, let's say, a year or 2 years, for training costs that were incurred, that were paid to train them up. What's interesting is these agreements, and to your point, many people were unaware they even existed. This language has been around for quite a while, but now it's being utilized and enforced with increasing frequency, sometimes to the tune of $20,000, $30,000, which is a real shocker, a price tag to a departing employee.
I guess that's related to the employment fluidity out there, huh? Everybody's picking up and leaving jobs, and these costs are probably legitimate, and now the employer is sitting there holding the bag, huh?
Yeah, it's really fascinating, and a lot of it does come, as you just stated, from this perception and sometimes a reality that employees might be a little more flippant or willing to switch jobs fairly quickly. What's also fascinating is we've seen some of these chargebacks or this sort of resignation tax be imposed 24 months or more after someone left a company, even if they had a legitimate reason to leave. So, for example, one of the people that we helped out was a local delivery driver. He left a company because he was worried about some safety concerns related to vehicles he was driving. And a couple weeks later, he received a bill for $19,000 he owned for training costs. So he thought he had the right reason to leave. He was shocked by the amount. And interestingly enough, the letter demanding the payment was delivered to him by the person who took his route over. So a little bit of insult to injury there. So these amounts can be startling at times.
A resignation tax. Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like. Is that legal? Is that legit? Whose side are you on in this?
Yeah, well, I work with a lot of companies, and the ones we work with always are looking to make this reasonable and necessary. But that's not automatically the default for many organizations, because they're so worried that people will leave, they almost want this to be a disincentive. Some might not even impose this resignation tax, but it's hanging over the heads of employees who heard perhaps someone else had to pay at the company who left shortly after being hired. So, for example, there's a hairstylist at a local salon company, and she wanted to leave to start her own salon chain, and not even looking to compete in the same markets as her former employer. And she kind of rethought her options when she realized she'd owe $32,000 just for leaving. So it can be all over the map, but you definitely, if you're the employer, you're not precluded. You're not prohibited from this kind of agreement. You just want to be very open about it, and you want to be reasonable in the terms.
Aren't senators or is the Congress looking into this? Is there some change in the law about this?
Yeah, well, that's sort of the kind of the boomerang effect or the reaction to some of these more egregious examples. Just last week, six senators have asked the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in D.C. to start to evaluate how many of these agreements are out there. When are they used? Because, for example, you can be asked to sign one whether it's at the time of employment or years later when there's going to be a big training push. And are they, in fact, reasonable? So I would expect in the next 6 months to 12 months, we're going to see more rules about the type of agreements, the type of jobs, the tenure, and the training that can be reimbursed.
Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work. It's always fascinating, Philip. SeyfarthAtWork.com. You spell that SeyfarthAtWork at work.com. Nice to talk to you, Philip.
Thanks for having me, John.
Right now, Jack Ablin joins us, Chief Investment Officer here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's a founding partner at Crescent. CrescentCapital.com is the website. Jack, thanks for joining us again. You're on the air. How are you?
Great, John. How are you?
I'm good. Let's talk about what's happened in the first quarter now. What's your assessment of various equities, the stock market, and some companies particularly?
Yeah, so, most of the high-profile companies, if you look at the FANG stocks, for example, are off pretty dramatically. You take Apple, Google, Amazon, Facebook. Facebook's off between 30 and 40% just this year alone. Netflix, which was our go-to entertainment during the lockdown, down nearly 70% just for 2022. So what that's doing is if you take, these five or six largest companies in the S&P, they account for about a quarter of the market. And so what appears in the headlines is pretty much overstating what's going on with the average stock in the market right now.
You mean most companies are doing better than this sounds?
Most companies, I can't say they're all, running the races, but with the overall market down about 12, the average stock probably down about half that.
I wonder if that's reflected then in everybody's 401ks, because a lot of us are afraid to look right now.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, these FANG stocks comprise a lot of that 401k money. And, keep in mind, these are companies, I think, for example, Alphabet last year up 65%. So they were driving a lot of the market movement higher during the up years, and now they're giving, some of that back.
Don't some of these companies we're talking about, though, have a lot of cash? Aren't they better able to weather a downturn or higher interest rates?
Absolutely. This isn't a matter of solvency or viability. I mean, this is really just a simple matter of valuation. So these are companies that, have earning streams that go out long into the future. And when you take a discount rate to bring it back to current values and raise that discount rate, thanks to the Federal Reserve, that's going to bring that fair value down quite a bit. Whereas companies that have, higher paying dividends, actually dividend stocks this year are up on average. And that's just because a lot of the return you get is really upfront.
Jack, last year, did you think that Netflix was overvalued?
I'm not an individual stock analyst per se, but yeah, I think that, these are companies that thrive. Certainly, you couldn't have picked a better business model in the lockdown. I mean, Amazon, same thing. And so, just a matter of time that we were going to move on beyond these lockdowns and now get out and stop buying things and actually start purchasing services and experiences.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, though, the difference between viability and valuation. So I don't imagine Netflix is going to go away, even though its valuation, as you said, off 70%. I'm kind of confused by that because I think Netflix is an awesome product. Personally, I like it. I think it's even fairly priced as a consumer. So I wonder what the viability of Netflix is.
Yeah, it's certainly a viable stock and a viable company. But I think investors had drawn trend lines where we saw growth in 2020 and growth in 2021 and just extended that trend line higher. And, of course, two things happened. One is, there are only so many people that are going to sign up. If you didn't sign up during the lockdown, are you going to sign up in 2022?
Yeah, for a higher price, no less. Yeah.
Right. And then the other is really the what I'll call the Amazon effect. I mean, if you think about Q1 of last year, things couldn't have been better for Amazon last year. So now when you look at year-over-year results, obviously we've got now the first downtrend on a year-over-year basis in its history, and that sent investors running a little bit.
I'm so much smarter after the fact. That is, of course, Netflix or Amazon or Facebook would do well. Any of the stay-at-home stocks, a Peloton would do well during the pandemic. But I should have seen that as the virus started to dissipate and as we got vaccines, people would be able to go back out, and then these stocks would be less important to people in their daily lives. So I should have sold 6 months ago, 4 months ago, right?
Well, I mean, that's when you look at either, you know, that's where the North Pole and the South Pole come into effect, where everything, you know, I remember I got burned in the airlines because, you know, I said, look, everyone's traveling and everyone's going, you know, running around and gas prices are low and it couldn't be any better for airlines. And that was the problem. It couldn't have gotten any better for airlines. And I ended up buying at the top. And little did I know, I was standing at the North Pole. Any step I took was going to be a step in the wrong direction. But the same works in the South Pole, too. And so a lot of people are looking at the markets going, you know, what? Everything's so terrible. Well, you know, if everyone sold, maybe we're, you know, getting closer to the South Pole than we are to the North Pole right now.
Well, do you have a forecast for this year?
Well, I'm still pretty defensive. I will say that if you look at the S&P overall, we still probably, including these higher valued stocks, you know, we still probably have, 10 to potentially even 15% downside to go if valuations match where they were before the Fed got involved with these markets. So there is some downside risk. But on the other hand, if you look at the average stock, so that you can buy the S&P equal weighted index, I think there's a ticker RSP, that actually has a little upside, about 3% if valuations align with market values. So there is some opportunity in the average stock right
now.
Yeah,
one last thing then. What do you think is going to drive the markets then this year? Is it supply chain? Is it the Fed?
It's certainly the Fed, but I think our view is that inflation peaked in Q1 in March at 8.5%. I think consumers are already starting to pull back, so we will see some slowing. I think our bottom line is the Fed is not going to have to raise rates as aggressively as the market thinks, and as a result of that, the investment community is probably overpricing downside risk, yeah, which I think is probably a little bit overdone right now.
Well, there's just a hint of optimism in that then, isn't there?
Absolutely. So I just think that, you know, if you look around and read all the headlines, you'd say this is a terrible time to invest in stocks. Well, it's sort of like the Netflix subscriber. If you haven't already sold, you know, why would you sell now?
Yeah, fair enough. Jack Ablin is a chief investment officer and a founding partner at Crescent. Visit crescentcapital.com. Nice to talk to you today, Jack.
All right, thanks, John.
Always appreciate his expertise. It's 12:43 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. State Farm is raising auto insurance rates again in Illinois by another 3%. The hike comes just 2 weeks after the company's 5% rate hike went into effect. The Bloomington-based insurer is the largest company covering autos in the state, and according to Cranes, is reacting to higher claims costs. The average policy premium will rise by about $60 this year with the two rate hikes combined. The latest increase takes effect June 13th. A cybersecurity startup in Chicago has had a successful funding round. Network Perception raised $13 million, and Cranes reports the company has now tripled its revenue and doubled its employee count. It has 40 staffers, and that's expected to possibly double again this year. Network Perception software is used by infrastructure providers like electric companies to spot vulnerabilities and comply with federal regulations. The company has about 100 customers, including some of the largest electric utilities in the U.S. It got its start at the University of Illinois with federally funded research. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We've got the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Yes, we do. Restaurants have sure had a tough time during the pandemic and after the pandemic attracting and keeping workers. But here's a cheerful and a willing worker.
Hi, my name is Rita.
Hi, Rita. If you happen to be eating at one of 8 Chili's restaurants in Chicago, you'll be able to meet Rita.
Okay, everyone. Follow me. I'll take you right to your table.
Rita is not your typical Chili's employee.
It's okay to stare. It's not every day a robot takes you to your table.
Well, she's a service robot. She kind of resembles a little R2-D2 unit.
That's Wade Allen, Senior VP of Innovation for Brinker International. That's the parent company for Chili's. Rita's being rolled out right now across the Chicago area.
We have Chicago Ridge, Homer Glen, Morris, Plainfield, Orland Park, Oswego, Romeoville, and Shorewood.
If you're thinking, wait a minute, robots taking our jobs? He says that is not the case.
Well, I mean, the primary focus is just to make the job easier. Working in the casual dining space can be a difficult job. A lot of time on your feet, a lot of running back and forth to the kitchen, carrying heavy plates. And Rita's core focus was all about making life easier for our team members and delighting our guests.
And one big thing that Rita helps out with is birthdays.
Whoop, whoop! Let's celebrate on three. 1, 2, 3. Happy, happy birthday.
Well, she's got plenty of energy. How's she doing on the job, Wade?
Yeah, she's pretty good. We're still working on the drinks because there's, you know, those can fall easily. But we have big square trays that we now have designed her to carry. And most, if not all, food items in our restaurant can be carried on those trays. Everything from entrees to desserts to appetizers. The drinks we're still working on.
And customers like her?
Tons of Instagram and Twitter photographs with Rita. They'll stop her and see if they'll turn and take a picture, and sometimes they'll crowd around her to take a shot. I actually think that's because we grew up on Star Wars and these little robots, and now they're coming to real life, and people get super excited about that.
Where'd the name Rita come from?
We sell a lot of margaritas.
There you go. Rita, serving you at 8 Chicago area Chili's.
Beep boop, bop boop, beep boop.
Today is National Raspberry Popover and National Chocolate Custard Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Those are where again? Chili's in, and then you have those locations. Are those in like the Shorewood location? Those are in stores now.
Chicago area Chili's restaurants.
I'm amazed. I think I'm going to go there
just to see Rita.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I'm going to love it. That's my point. I need to experience this thing, the Chili's around town. Wow. Okay, Amy, go talk to me about where the employees are. What's going on there?
Yeah, so some new data out from the Bureau of Labor Statistics earlier today indicates that as far as March goes, there was a record 4.5 million people that quit their jobs. So overall, the quit rate is up about 3%. So we haven't seen that level since the end of 2021 in December. But those rates were up most significantly in professional and business services and in construction. And if you look at that, if you compare that with the number of available jobs, which also went up to 11.5 million. That is the highest since data started in December of 2020. That's according to the job openings and labor turnover survey data. So if you pencil that out, that becomes about 1.9 available job openings for every unemployed worker in the month of March. So it's really just another sign of this really robust labor market right now.
Yeah, no kidding. I see Rivian is in the news too. That's a local company you follow.
Yeah, I keep close tabs on Rivian. They're based in California, but their plant is in downstate Normal. And that plant has struggled a bit. They've cited a lot of supply chain issues. So they've had some issues ramping up production. Although in November, their IPO was the sixth largest in U.S. history. That got them about $13 billion to fund growth. They've still, you know, pointed to this supply chain pressure as part of the issue they're struggling with in terms of production. But nonetheless, now they have worked out a deal to build a massive plant near Atlanta to help boost production efforts. They're getting $1.5 billion in state and local incentives to do that. That is the biggest package in Georgia history. And it's a combination of tax credits and abatements and subsidies and site preparation and job training support from the state. That's all according to a statement from the Georgia Department of Economic Development. So we'll see how that impacts the plant in Normal, what that does overall to Rivian's production and their bottom line.
They're not saying that they're going to transfer the jobs from here to there?
No, they're not saying that. They really are looking at this as kind of an expansion of kind of the net win, I think is the term they used, of how to just kind of grow the company and scale a lot faster.
Well, maybe this is a discussion for another day, but that's how one state, or that's how a company plays states off of each other. I'll go here if you give me a better deal. I'll go there if you give me a better deal. And suddenly, this company that was pretty well financed gets $1.5 billion in an incentive package to build a plant in Georgia, right?
Yeah, and they had been talking about building a second plant for a while. Obviously, you know, with the ties in Normal, I think there was hope for a little while that that would mean an expansion in Normal, or maybe that would stay somewhere in the Midwest, possibly Detroit, something like that. But to see that move to Georgia, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this package is helpful to them, whether or not that helps get them over the hump for these supply chain issues and what that does to their bottom line.
What's this story about Ulta Beauty? They got in trouble for doing what now?
Oh, this was a cringe. So Ad Age reported on this. So on Sunday, you know, all the time we see mailing lists, you know, emails going out from mailing lists from retailers. So on Sunday, the from Ulta, an email went out that the subject line said, "Come hang with Kate Spade." So that's a word choice that made a lot of people cringe. Obviously, the designer Kate Spade died by suicide about 4 years ago. So lots of cringe reaction on Twitter. There was an apology issued eventually. They called the email insensitive. They said, "We apologize to the Spade family, our Kate Spade New York brand partners, and to our guests. Thank you for understanding as we strive to do better." But you know, it's one of those examples. We see this from brands a lot. Sometimes companies relegate their social media messaging to a more junior employee or somebody who's not in touch with the overall business objectives, or maybe there's not a lot of oversight, and we see, you know, brands kind of stepping in it. We often see this in times of big news stories. Maybe a brand tries to get on board with a trending hashtag, or doesn't really understand what the hashtag means, or makes a joke about something in the news that shouldn't be joked about. And so another part of this that was very cringy for a lot of people at Ulta was that it was, this email came on May 1st, which was the first day of Mental Health Awareness Month, which a lot of people pointed out on social media.
If they had done it a different day or month, or maybe had referenced a different company, I don't think the word hang is in that context so pejorative or dangerous that you can't use it. "We're all hanging out together" is still a phrase that a company could use, right?
Sure. Kate Spade's death, her suicide, it was by hanging 4 years ago. So I think that was also kind of part of the dots people were connecting. Yeah. But certainly, yeah, like, let's hang out. That seems to be a pretty innocuous term. But I think in this case, it was just really cringy because of that specific word.
No kidding. Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.